is a commercial-free, streaming on-demand presentation from 92.9 WBPN.
San Francisco in the late 60s was known for its Haight-Ashbury district with its resident hippies. Flower power, psychedelia,
the summer of love,
anti-war protests, promoter Bill Graham, the Fillmore Auditorium, and the music of the Jefferson Airplane, the Grateful Dead, and Quicksilver Messenger Service, to name just a few. But across the bay, in the small town of El Cerrito, three high school friends, John Fogarty, Doug Clifford, and Stu Cook, along with John's older brother Tom, collectively known as Creedence Clearwater Revival, were creating their own unique blend of music that would change their lives forever and ours. Singer, songwriter, and lead guitarist, John Fogarty.
We were all on the same page. Everybody was pulling in the same direction. It's a pretty remarkable story about four kids come out of their garage with some music, and it goes all around the world and lasts 40 years. That's an amazing story.
Drummer Doug Cosmo Clifford.
You know, the Creedence story on all levels is a unique one. And the good news is that the uniqueness of the music seems to be the fundamental focus of the entire deal. But the rest of it is pretty comedic. I mean, it's unbelievable. A band at the level that we were and still are. The stories behind it all.
Bass player Stu Cook.
I really am at a total loss to explain how it still fits in, but it does, and it fits in well.
In celebration of Creedence Clearwater Revival's 40th anniversary, Fantasy Records has reissued their first six albums, each remastered and filled with bonus tracks, both studio and live, as well as new liner notes from some of the top music critics who were there when it all started. Over the next hour, John, Doug, and Stu will take you back to the band's beginnings, share with you the recipe they used to cook up their sound, and play the songs that have made them an American treasure. Join the celebration. It's the 40th anniversary of Creedence Clearwater Revival.
I put a spell on you.
take none of your fool around. Ain't gonna take none of your put me down. I put a spell on you. Charge your mind.
CCR and their take on Screamin' Jay Hawkins' 1957 song, I Put a Spell on You, the lead track off their self-titled 1968 debut, John Fogerty.
Of course, Screamin' Jay is the virtual owner of that song, but I sure have a good time singing it. I mean, I still really enjoy that song. That's not something everyone can always say about everything they do.
That first album had another song by Hawkins, Dale Hawkins. Susie Q gave CCR their first top 20 song, peaking at number 11 in 1968. The story of Creedence Clearwater Revival starts in the late 50s in El Cerrito, California. Stu Cook.
Doug Clifford was a friend of mine. I'd met him the first day in junior high school in our homeroom, you know, alphabetical order, and I think he sat in front of me. He was teaching himself how to play drums, you know, listen to records, and I was doing the same with piano, and he had a friend, John Fogerty. They were talking about putting a band together, and so it was back in 59, I guess, when the three of us got together and formed an instrumental trio called the Blue Velvets.
The Blue Velvets eventually morphed into a four-piece with the addition of Tom Fogerty. Drummer Doug Clifford.
Tom Fogerty would come in, being 4 years our senior, he was a singer in another band, and sing about five songs and then leave, and all the girls would be screaming, and he was the star of the show, and we'd have to grind out two more hours of hard work. You know, we thought, singers, not a bad gig.
With Tom Fogerty on rhythm guitar, Stu Cook moved from piano to bass, and in 1964, the Blue Velvets signed a recording contract with Fantasy Records. With the British invasion underway, one of the owners of Fantasy changed their name to the Gollywogs, named after a UK doll and literary character. Once again, Doug Clifford.
We hated the name, and we really hated the uniforms that we were made to wear by our manager. Pretty embarrassing stuff. But we did have a regional hit, which gave us a taste of success. And it also gave us that that little bit of incentive. You know, wow, gosh, you know, we came really close this time. Maybe the next time.
That next time would come with one more and final name change.
We had three pages of names. Tom knew a fellow named Creedence Newball, a black janitor from South Africa. And so we thought Creedence Newball would be cool. And then we thought, geez, you know, if we have a hit, he'll want to be part of the action and so forth. Not a good idea. But Creedence, truth and honesty and all that. Clearwater was an Olympia beer commercial on television. It had a nice visual, a nice stream running through the forest. And I was heavy into ecology and botany and biology as a young guy. And so I had nice imagery there. And then Revival was a revival of ourselves. No more manager, no more goofy clothes, none of that stuff that we dreaded so much.
Creedence hit the road and, with the help of Top 40 Radio, built a national fan base. During this time, they also recorded their follow-up, Bayou Country, the first in a series of hit albums over the next 3 years. It was fueled by John Fogerty's top five composition, Proud Mary.
Left a good job in the city, waking for the man every night and day. And I never lost a minute of sleep, and worrying about the way things might have been. Be clear, keep on playing. Proud Mary, keep on playing. Rolling on a river.
She's still rolling down the river 40 years later. Proud Mary, Bob Dylan's favorite song of 1969, and the first of five number two songs by Creedence Clearwater Revival. That feat has earned them the distinction of having the most number two hits without reaching number one on the Billboard Hot 100. Proud Mary's been covered hundreds of times, the most famous of which was by Ike and Tina Turner, who took it to number four in 1971. But while Creedence might have been happy that their song was so popular, the same could not be said about Ike Turner, as Doug Clifford explains.
We worked with Ike and Tina Turner. We were supposed to do eight shows with them, and it turned out to be three because we found out that Ike was beating Tina up after the shows. We didn't really like that at all. And then after their third show, Ike came out and told the audience that he wanted to share his brand new song with them, which was a straight lift from Born on the Bayou. So we said, you know, he's beating his wife, he's stealing our music. No more.
Just a little boy, a standing to my daddy and me. My papa said, son, don't let the man get you. Do what it done to me. 'Cause I get you.
from Creedence Clearwater Revival's second album, Bayou Country. That was the swamp rock sound of Born on the Bayou, John Fogerty.
That was the song where I invented or created my mythical world of the swamp, crossed with rock and roll. Perhaps other people had done it specifically. You know, I can't really think of one. I gathered that background from music as much as anything, but I can't name a song that, let's say, led me to write Born on the Bayou. But I knew when I was trying to create Born on the Bayou that I was trying to talk about a swampy thing. Now I can look back and say I was creating a mythical world because it was a rock and roll world of the swamp. That's sort of weird if you think about it. I guess I'm proud of that achievement because once that little door opened for me, I sort of got real comfortable in the swamp, and the swamp has been very good to me.
In March of 1969, just 2 months after the release of Bayou Country and a month after Proud Mary raced up the charts, Creedence released their second consecutive number two single, Bad Moon Rising.
I started writing song titles in a little book that I keep. I still have the exact same book. I think on the back side of the first page, the first side of which has Proud Mary and I think Lodi on it, on the back side, I had written down Bad Moon Rising, and I didn't have a clue what it meant. And I wrote two or three or four songs kind of with that title until I finally got the idea. The imagery from an old movie that was called The Devil and Daniel Webster.
I see
Bad Moon Rising live in Berlin, Germany from September 16th, 1971. That's just one of the bounty of bonus tracks found on the 40th anniversary remastered albums of Creedence Clearwater Revival.
I've long said that that's my favorite album and probably my favorite song.
We'll find out exactly what John Fogerty means right after this.
Traffic in the city tonight.
Creedence Clearwater Revival, the 40th anniversary edition reissues.
It ain't me, it ain't me.
Six classic albums, all digitally remastered. And featuring rare or previously unreleased bonus tracks. Rock and roll as it should be. Creedence Clearwater Revival, the 40th anniversary edition reissues. All six CDs now available at Best Buy.
Yeah, we could spend all day telling you that 92.9 WBPM plays the best variety of the biggest hits of all time, but we'd rather just play more of them. Let's push a button.
Thanks for joining the 40th anniversary celebration of the music of Creedence Clearwater Revival, which Fantasy Records has marked with the re-release of the band's first six albums. all have been remastered and packed with bonus tracks. Looking back at the Creedence catalog, 7 albums released over 5 years, singer John Fogerty says his favorite is their 3rd, Green River.
I've long said that that's my favorite album from the Creedence era, and probably my favorite song from that era too. Green River was in fact a place called Poudre Creek up in Northern California by Winters. They dammed up that creek a little later in my childhood and created Lake Berryessa. But in the days when I was going there as a 4- and 5-year-old, it was just this really lazy country creek. It's the place where I learned how to swim. It's the place where I first caught pollywogs. There was a rope hanging from the tree there, and they had a few cabins you could rent. And the place was kind of run by an old guy whose name was Cody. And it was rumored he was a direct descendant of Buffalo Bill. And all those elements are in my song.
The title track from CCR's 3rd album, Green River. The song peaked at number 2, their 3rd consecutive song to hit that slot, but the album became their first number 1 seller in September of 1969. The summer of 69 saw Creedence on the road, highlighted by appearances at festivals, including the Atlanta Pop Festival, the Atlantic Pop Festival, and the granddaddy of them all, Woodstock. Drummer Doug Clifford.
We were the number 1 concert draw in the world at that point in time, and nobody wanted to touch it because these guys were not professional promoters. They were just hippies with this peace and love concept. We knew that it would probably be disastrous from the production side and from every side, but we just liked them. And we said, okay, we were the first major act to sign. Once we signed, all the other bands fell into place.
Bassist Stu Cook.
Well, the Woodstock Festival was the whole thing taken to the nth degree, you know. We left Los Angeles, flew all night to get to Boston, took another plane to some other town, took a helicopter in. It was a Holiday Inn, I believe, where all the artists were being stashed, and there was a nonstop party going on when we arrived there. And after joining in with that briefly, we elected to go out to the site. We didn't know how far behind schedule the show was running, so we planned to play and come back and continue with the party. But we got out there and saw how far behind the schedule was. We were stuck out there at that point and didn't have sort of a mini base camp of our own out there. So Bill Graham's people took us in. A guy named Barry Imhoff, who used to work with Bill, took us in, fed us, sheltered us. And we finally went on about 3 in the morning after the Grateful Dead finished. By then, believe me, the audience was sound asleep. So however we played, I think it was good enough to be in the movie. Nobody was amazing. There was a lot of good performances there. John didn't feel our performances were good enough to be in the movie or on the album. I disagree.
Recorded in Hamburg, Germany in September 1971, that's the three-piece version of Creedence and Lodi, one of the 22 bonus tracks spread over the re-release of the band's first six albums. It's like having 22 gifts in honor of the band's 40th anniversary. 1969 was CCR's most productive year. They outsold the Beatles thanks to releasing six songs which made the Billboard Hot 100 and four cracked the top 10. They also performed the Herculean feat of putting out three studio albums. The third of those made its way into stores in November, and like the Fab Four did 2 years earlier with Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, Creedence's Willie and the Poor Boys was centered around a mythical band, which CCR posed as on the album's cover. Down on the Corner, the lead track off Willie and the Poor Boys, debuted on the Billboard Hot 100 on November 8, 1969. 8 days later, on November 16th, Creedence Clearwater Revival made their first appearance on the hugely influential Ed Sullivan Show. Here's Doug Clifford.
Yeah, it was our first time on Ed Sullivan Show, and we were scared to death, and 30 million people watching live, and And the last rock and roll band he had had a couple weeks before was the Rolling Stones, and they got drunk, put their beer cans in the toilet, and crapped on top of that. And they were obnoxious, and they were the Rolling Stones, you know. So they were really coming down on us. And we were always yes or no, sir. We were referred to by our peers as the Boy Scouts of rock and roll, and I'm proud of that, quite frankly.
Creedence did two songs on Sullivan, Down on the Corner and Fortunate Son.
When it was being born as a song, it was born out of a lot of anger and resentment, and I would say almost primal rage at the situation, which had repeated itself again in the 60s. It's been going on since two guys got together and decided to be an army. And the one guy said, well, I'm more privileged than you, so you go fight and I'll stay home. You know, where the people with privilege don't have to fight and die. And yet the lesser privileged people, meaning the peasants, all got to go off and put it on the line for whatever cause the big boys have decided is worthy of guys dying for.
John's brother, the late Tom Fogerty.
Especially in terms of the way John would write, I think he was thinking not to just write the same old kind of love song, you know. We played around with a few love songs like Susie Q and I Put a Spell on You, those kind of songs. But when John chose to write, he seemed to want to get deeper into what was going on at the time in the late 60s, you know, and a lot of it had to do with the plight of the working man and young people, men and women who were confronted with the war and how it was affecting them in a lot of ways, and he chose to write about that.
From the 40th anniversary edition of Willie and the Poor Boys, Creedence Clearwater Revival's Fortunate Son.
This was quite a shock to a guy in his 20s, full of all the idealism of the 60s. And now kind of seeing Richard Nixon and Haldeman and the rest of them.
That's next. We'll be right back.
Better run to the jungle.
Creedence Clearwater Revival, the 40th Anniversary Edition reissues.
It ain't me, it ain't me.
Six classic albums, all digitally remastered. And featuring rare or previously unreleased bonus tracks. Rock and roll as it should be. Creedence Clearwater Revival, the 40th Anniversary Edition reissues. All six CDs now available at Best Buy.
We get a lot of compliments on our music variety. Thanks for noticing. Now, please do tell all your friends that we're playing just great songs here at 92.9 WBPM.
You would think that after releasing six singles and three albums in 1969, that Creedence Clearwater Revival might take it easy as the calendar turned to 1970, but that was not to be. The new year saw the release of Travelin' Band,
the group's fourth number two single. It was written as a tip of the hat to the band's hero, Little Richard. Doug Clifford says, unfortunately, Richard's camp didn't see it that way.
Little Richard was one of the main forces in all of our careers and influences, and ended up suing John Fogerty, and he won. Richard won.
John Fogerty.
It's a little bit fantastic version of what happens to a band on the road, you know, the traveling band, all of them. Hotel situation, the radio situation, the limo, you know, all the rest. It's just sort of a picture of the crazy life of a touring band.
737 coming out of the sky. Oh, won't you take me down to Memphis on a midnight ride? I won't move. Hey, you need a traveling band. Yeah, better fly and cross the land. Try to get a hand. Hey, you need a traveling band. Take me to the hotel. Bag is gone. Oh, well, come on, come on. Won't you get me to my room? I won't move. Hey, you need a traveling band. Yeah, better fly and cross the land. Try to get a hand. Hey, you need a traveling band. Listen to the radio talking about the last show. Someone got excited at the call of state militia. Won't move. Hey, you need a traveling band. Yeah, better fly and cross the land. Try to get a hand. Hey, you need a traveling band.
Creedence Clearwater Revival and Traveling Band. The flip side of that song was Who'll Stop the Rain, which echoed Fogerty's dissatisfaction with the Nixon administration.
It just seemed to me that we were getting a lot of babble coming down from the government. The older you get, the more you learn that, you know, most citizens of most countries feel that way most of the time. But this was quite a shock to a guy in his 20s, full of all the idealism of the 60s. And now kind of seeing Richard Nixon and Haldeman and the rest of them just sort of blanket this rain of babble. It was all doublespeak. Someone would ask a question, and then they would give an answer to some other question in the space after the initial question. You got real confused and angry about that. So my song kind of reflected those feelings.
Long as I remember being
Fool Stop the Rain, another jewel from Creedence Clearwater Revival on our 40th anniversary radio and internet party for the band. In April of 1970, CCR was set to embark on their first European tour. So, in support of it, they released their second single of the year, Up Around the Bend, which, as Stu Cook explains, raised eyebrows in England.
Up Around the Bend is a quite happy song, you know, a very positive outlook song. But when we were touring England, there was some concern about just what the story was about. Because when someone goes around the bend or up around the bend, in English slang, it means they flipped out or lost it completely. So there was several questions, which at first we didn't understand, you know, doing press conferences and things like that when we were first touring England. There were several questions from the press just about, you know, what this song meant. And finally it was explained to us that it had practically an opposite meaning, you know, in the English context. So we found that amusing.
There's a place up ahead and I'm going just as fast as my feet can fly. Come away, come away if you're going. Leave the sinking ship behind. Come on the rising wind. We're going up around the bend.
Peaking at number four, that was Up Around the Bend, part of our 40th anniversary party for Creedence Clearwater Revival. That's from the album that many consider to be their finest work, Cosmos Factory. It was the band's best-selling release, as well as their second and final number one album. But it also signaled a sea change in the band. John Fogerty not only took complete control of the artistic reins, but he also acted as the band's business manager. That led to tension between him and his bandmates, particularly his older brother Tom. Doug Clifford picks up the story.
You know, Tom used to be the leader of the band. He's the one that got us recording when we were only 13 years old. For an older brother, treated his younger brother with love and guidance, and the rest of us, we were like his younger brothers as well. He was a guy that had a job, a wife, two kids, a house, and a mortgage, was doing well on his job, and had the balls to throw it all away. And his wife wasn't too happy about it, to take the chance with the band. And there were no guarantees. We took a chance, and we were very fortunate.
Tom Fogerty quit Creedence Clearwater Revival during the sessions for their sixth album, The Prophetic, titled Pendulum, which hit store shelves in December of 1970. It was their second album of the year, released just 5 months after their previous one.
Someone told me long ago, there's a calm before the storm. I know it's been coming for some time. When it's over, so
peaking at number 8 in the winter of 1971, that was Have You Ever Seen the Rain, the final single from Creedence Clearwater Revival as a four-piece unit. Creedence mustered on as a trio until October 16, 1972, when Fantasy Records announced that the band was no more.
These days, I tend to want to think about the happy times when the band was still together, traveling the world, making new music that went around the world, quite frankly. There was no signal at the time that things would go wrong, let's say. And even though it was a blur, it all happened in about 2.5 years. I tend to now want to think about those days in a happy way.
In 1973, John Fogerty began a solo career. But a series of legal battles with the former owners of Fantasy Records left him with a bitter taste in his mouth for the music business. As a result, he has put out only 8 albums in 35 years, a far cry from his Creedence days when he was responsible for 3 albums in 1 year and 6 in 3. Tom Fogerty released a few albums after leaving Creedence, but passed away from AIDS in 1990, the result of a blood transfusion during back surgery. Doug Cosmo Clifford and Stu Cook set up a mobile production company, as well as having worked with a number of artists. In 1995, they regrouped as Creedence Clearwater Revisited, who continued to tour today. In 1993, Creedence came together for their induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Creedence Clearwater Revival may have had a recording career that only lasted 5 years, but the results continue to be heard on radio, television, and in a number of memorable movies, including Forrest Gump, Apocalypse Now, and Born on the 4th of July. And in celebration of their 40th anniversary, Fantasy Records has remastered and re-released their first 6 albums, complete with bonus tracks. This special was produced by Wildfire Media for Fantasy Records. Copyright 2008, all rights reserved. No portion may be used without the written permission of the producers.
Hi, this is John Fogerty.
This is Stu Cook of Creedence.
Hi, this is Doug Cosmo Clifford of CCR.
And I'm Dan Neer. Thanks for listening.